Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Music with Map, the Map Podcast. My name is John.
And I'm Wes.
And what we do is we explore how music intersects with people in their day-to-day lives. Although today, it's a little bit different. This is still about music and a way that music intersects with someone's life. However, this someone is just a general... We're speaking objectively because we're speaking about producers.
Yeah, and a lot of the conversations that we have are, you know, really kind of like music nerd conversations or audio nerd conversations. So hopefully with more episodes like this, we continue to peel back the layers of what like actually transpires behind the scenes from when you hear somebody like pick up an acoustic guitar or a piano or something and say, hey, this is a song I'm working on, to definitely when you hear something on the radio, right?
Definitely, yeah. We kind of had that conversation a couple moons ago where we just thought, hey, that'd be cool to kind of extrapolate a little bit of that. And in that conversation, and actually it was in the conversation of the opener of season two, the current season, we just sort of realized, hey, wait a second, maybe it'd be cool to talk about some producers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit more of, it's a perspective that's a bit more of that back end, right? You know, like someone knows the artist and hears their song on the radio or whatever it might be, but they don't necessarily know the people that worked on it behind the scenes. Although producers kind of in the middle. Producers are sort of household names, I guess, right?
Yeah, some of them. I mean, producers are an interesting facet in the music process because oftentimes they're very talented musicians themselves.
Right.
Oftentimes they're actually very good singers and vocalists themselves.
True.
Oftentimes they're very good lyricists, right? And they write really good songs. So they do a lot of songwriting, but also what they kind of, their part in the whole process is they'll get an artist, say Christina Aguilera will come in after she's already produced a bunch of big songs, and a producer will either write a song for her or with her take one of her like sort of bare bonesy type songs that maybe she's working on and turn it from, like, just as I was saying earlier, that acoustic guitar vocal track to something that you hear on the radio with massive string sections and this arrangement and this big budget sound and all of these kinds of things in between. Now, that's obviously not the case for everybody. And as we kind of move farther and farther along in the musical process, more to 2022 and 2023, you know, producers are also recording engineers and they're good at mixing and sometimes they do a bit of that. But so it's a hard role to kind of pin down.
Uh-huh.
But I think to your point, there are household producer names that come up because they're continually attached to, and I'll air quotes, like successful musical projects, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Or whatever it might be, they've just, you know, their name is, whether it's associated with an artist or just standalone, they've just become a household name. So what's great is you kind of answered this question already, but I feel it's only fair that we pose the question, what is a producer? So I feel like you did a great job kind of highlighting a lot of those things that a producer generally does. Now, I'm pleased to say that, I don't know if you've heard of the internet, I'm using Google right now.
Ooh, Webster's Dictionary defines a producer as...
This is just actually... Oh, it's from Oxford. Producer. Okay, just generally producer. A person, company, or country that makes, grows, or supplies goods or commodities for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A person responsible for the financial and managerial aspects of making a movie or broadcast or for staging a play, opera, etc. So it's getting kind of closer to music, but not quite. Don't worry about it. Next tab, music producer.
Okay.
Definition. Okay. So as per Berkeley... it says, what does a music producer do? A record... Actually, no. Okay, well, they have that tab, but then Wikipedia. Let's just go with Wikipedia. That's a common one that we go to. A record producer is a recording project's creative and technical leader, commanding studio time and coaching artists, and in popular genres, typically creates the song's very sound and structure. The record producer, or simply the producer, is likened to film director and art director.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I can definitely see that tie. Like in my own experience in studios and just working in on different projects, the producer's somebody who, again, as I was saying, is typically a very good musician in their own right. And when an artist comes into the studio, you have a limited time to like record your stuff and kind of get everything down. So especially when it's like more of a solo artist or a singer-songwriter, but also with bands too, a producer might say, hey, how about you try playing that part this way, right? Because maybe it's more musically appealing, or maybe it's more interesting to listen to, because the writer, the songwriter has, you know, a specific idea of what they're trying to express in their mind.
Yeah.
But sometimes maybe a few of the musical ideas or lyrical ideas, or lack thereof when it comes to breaks and pauses and other cool things like that. Sometimes they kind of miss some of the appealing nature of what a song could potentially be.
Right.
In relation to, I think what you said, that like monetary, because the goal here is to make something that's accessible to the most amount of people. Sometimes, most of the time.
Yeah, and then I also think, though, when you alluded to this, is it's also sort of tapping into what the artist, the focal point of the project, it's like what it is ultimately you're looking to achieve. And I think that a producer basically is that sort of like outside view, bird's eye view of the whole thing, and just sort of says like, it seems like this is what you're looking to achieve. And so like they kind of facilitate that. And I was even thinking as you're saying that, like the singer-songwriter example, you know, maybe they're in a studio strumming their guitar and singing their vocal part as they did when they pitched that idea to the producer. But then the producer's like, I hired this drummer because they're going to play really well to the kind of vibe that you're putting forward. And like in the studio can say, hey, you're doing a bit too much of this. We need more of this, you know? And that singer songwriter is still there plugging away doing their same thing. But the producer kind of has a hand, like, you know, doing more than that, or we've talked about like arrangements as well, just in general, right?
Also the tonal qualities, right? Like say like a heavy rock band comes in and they think they have these really great guitar tones, but then you hear them on record and it's like, ah, but then the producer's the one would be like, hey, how about let's try, you know, fiddling with the knobs in this way.
For sure.
Adding more, you know, distortion or over, you know, all kinds of different, without getting too technical, all kinds of different terms to help find like a cool, or really great full sounding tone.
Absolutely. You could be like, oh, you know, it sounds like you're trying to get a really like nice crunchy sound with some low end, but you have too much low end and you're losing this. So if we remove that, then we'll actually get that, especially when you factor in like the role of the bass guitar and the bass drum and stuff. Yeah. Okay, great. Now I couldn't help but bring this up too. So not because I wanted to, but it just sort of came up as a suggestion with the search, is music producer salary Toronto.
Oh, that's intriguing.
I know. So I guess I'm kind of picturing that this is the kind of thing where maybe it's like someone who works in like a production house, where maybe they're doing songs for commercial or film or whatever, like in just in general, like the notion of like a music producer in that way.
Well, I think it's important to throw the caveat out there that, you know, the music producers that live in the top echelon are like music artists that live on the top echelon. You know, there's millions of singer-songwriters out there. There's very few Justin Bieber types, right?
Big time.
And it's the same thing with producers. There's lots of people that make music for like commercials and will go and produce, you know, a comedy album, you know, at your local comedy venue, and then go and record, you know, all of the sort of little things that, because we live in such a saturated market, which is great, I think, where all these little like niches exist, so that these independent producers can kind of still make a living and pay their bills.
Or I would even, you know, just speaking hypothetically, like say there's two guys in Toronto that run a not-for-profit organization that sort of works with people to create their own music. Like that might be an example.
Tell me more about this.
Well, actually, funny you should ask. There's a podcast you should check out. Nice. Okay, cool. Shameless plug. Yeah, made its way in there. All right. We're talking about
episode
MAP,
end.
Yeah, by the way, Mobile Arts Programming Association, or MAP for short. Yeah. Contact us for more information. No, but okay. So it looks like the median, the average salary is about $88K a year.
Who collects this data?
It's from Salary Expert, powered by ERI, which means nothing to us right now. Entry is $64,000. A senior music producer salary is almost $110,000.
Well, I will say, like, at its lower levels, not lower levels, that's not the word, maybe grassroots levels, a lot of music producers will typically, they have more of a stable income than, say, the artist would.
Yeah.
Because an artist will go to a producer and pay them money to, like, hey, I want to record, you know, a 6-song EP.
Yeah.
You need to record it for me. I'll play all the things and sing and do-da-da, right? And then the producer will, like, do all the bells and whistles, record it, give it to them. But the producer actually gets paid, and maybe that artist doesn't end up going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and then also the producer, as I was saying earlier, maybe has a side hustle where they write jingles for commercials on your local TV station, right? Yeah. Things like that. So,
and also, like, you know, if the producer works on a song and they're part of the creative process and the recorded process, recorded material and stuff like that, and that song is a bit of a hit, then, you know, they're making some like residual cash, yes. But then they're still also able to continue to work on different projects. It's almost like a studio engineer in a studio. It's just like, yeah, the artist may be coming in and out, but it's like your job is still there. Mm-hmm. And especially if a producer has like connections with a few different labels. And so like those labels just like funnel artists to them at the same time. And then, like you said, it's like, that's one artist that comes in and out, but for that producer, they see a lot of different faces. Yeah. You know?
And typically too, like, and maybe this is another episode when we get into like recording engineers,
talking more about Matt. No,
well,
I'm just kidding.
Yes, that's every episode. But, like a recording engineer typically like works for a business. Right. Like they work for a recording studio.
For the studio, yeah.
Where sometime, most of the time, a producer's freelance will like, hey, you know, today I'm working at Metalworks down in Mississauga. Tomorrow, you know, I'm up at a different studio up in Scarborough. Right. Like, and so they kind of travel from space to space and are usually like independent contractors, where a recording engineer typically is like, I work at Metalworks, right? That's my studio.
And they're almost like in between that and then like a performing artist, where like the performing artist, like obviously then going on tour, they're even around even more and stuff like that. It's funny how they're kind of like right in between those two. But okay, yeah, so through this conversation, we've given some examples without referring to anyone specifically, which is also part of this episode. Yeah. But we also, so we've defined what a music producer is, and then, you know, common examples and different scenarios where a music producer would work. And Wes and I have talked about this before, especially there's some household names. For me, right away, when I think of a producer, there are some household names that come up. So today I tried to use something a little different.
For example, and something that's topical, like the Super Bowl recently passed by the time we were recording this episode. And in the past, there was a massive Super Bowl show all around Dr. Dre, who is a famous producer. And a lot of the artists that he's produced, like Snoop Dogg, Mary J. Blige, Eminem, Kendrick Lamar, they were all there performing. And so he's had a part in all of their musical projects, right? So producers.
Producers, yeah. And there you go. So you started off. So Dr. Dre, household name for a producer. Yeah. Absolutely. In addition to being an artist.
And he writes his own music and has his own solo stuff. And a lot of producers also do that. Not all, but
and
some.
I've watched different sort of interviews with him talking about his process as an engineer as well, right? In terms of like what he does to accomplish specific sounds. So, you know, case in point right there. Another household name that comes to mind, where again you can tick all those boxes. I don't know if you're going to bring this person up, but I think of Quincy Jones.
Quincy Jones is a great, great producer.
Quincy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also an incredibly talented musician.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, and it's interesting because I know from watching one specific documentary, I forget what it's called, but it was just like, you know, in his early days, he did a lot of scoring for film and for artists as well. And like most notably, it's I think he really sort of struck a chord with, pun intended, with Frank Sinatra in like the 50s. I didn't actually mean to do that. I didn't actually mean for that pun to happen. Wow. But I'm not going to say it was unintentional. Like, this is a music podcast. I said struck a chord. Like, obviously,
I will say that tone sits well with me.
I don't get it. So anyway, Quincy Jones. And then also
Quincy Jones like produced Michael Jackson's Thriller, by the way. For those that aren't familiar with Quincy Jones, if you're not familiar with the name, you probably are, but
I think that Quincy Jones produced all of the Michael Jackson records. I can look it up that he is best known for. So the one that goes You Wanna Be Sad? No, that's Thriller. Oh, this is driving me wild. It's got You Got Me Working da-da-da-da now. Quincy Jones. Oh, bow, bow, diggy. What's the record that came out before Thriller? And then Bad came out after Thriller. Because Quincy Jones was doing like soundtracks or something like that. And Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson were working on a movie together that Quincy Jones was writing the soundtrack for. And then he was like, I'm going to produce your music. And then the one that came out.
Off the Wall.
Off the Wall! For the love of God! I couldn't remember me. Yes. You Got Me Working Day and Night, I think, is maybe the song that I was singing there.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
But Quincy Jones also, like, the vast majority of people that were popular in the music scene in the 1980s and late 70s and even into the 90s, like, Quincy Jones
Yeah.
Probably had a part in some facet of that.
And then production. Also created his own music, like played his own music as well. Cause I can remember a previous time that we talked about Quincy Jones. I can remember bringing up an album, which, oh yeah. And Quincy Jones, Bossa Nova, which is like the song that they used for, it's like the theme song for Austin Powers.
Right.
Bow, bow, bow. Maybe this one here.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. But then also, he did an album that was a nod to Stevie Wonder. And Stevie Wonder was also one of, I think, four songwriters of the Thriller album. Michael Jackson included, Quincy Jones, and then I think like Rod Temperton or something like that.
Mm.
Yeah, You've Got a Bad Girl. So this is a 1973 record by Quincy Jones. You've Got a Bad Girl is a song by Stevie Wonder, which was released probably around that same time. And then the song, the opening track is called Summer in the City, which is a cover of, what is it, the Lovin' Spoonfuls or something like that?
I think so.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Hot down, Summer in the City, back in my, yeah. So he does a cover of that. So check it out. Which, like, you might know from, okay, so that, now just really quickly, Passing Me By the group Farside from like 90s hip hop. So they obviously like adjusted the tone of it there, but yeah, anyway, just okay. That was a bit of a side because we started talking about like sampling and stuff like that, but that goes to show you kind of like, you know, the different hats and the different sort of like irons in the fire that Quincy Jones as a producer had going on. And that was like, yeah, 1973, did I say, I think, was that record? So,
well, our to give everybody context, our challenge for each other today was to bring a producer to talk about and maybe listen to some of their material.
Right.
So okay. It wasn't Dr. Dre or Quincy Jones.
For me, no. No.
Me neither.
Yeah, so that's great, though. Okay, we can tick the household producer name off the list then. Great.
I'm very intrigued to see what you brought to the table.
Okay, well, I mean, when we did our a couple episodes ago, I mentioned John Mutt Lang, who has done like all kinds of different stuff. So to me, Shania Twain, like his work with the one record, I think it's from 1997.
The Shania Twain?
Yeah. Record? Come On Over? Is that what it's called? Let me.
I'm going to say.
Yeah, Come On Over, 1997 is like, recognized by the Guinness World Records as the biggest selling studio album by a solo female artist and the best selling album in the USA by a solo female artist. Now, I don't know how accurate that is.
This was
also Wikipedia. That's 2021.
I will say that it was kind of like the late 90s were kind of the prime of record sales, right?
Because big time, yeah.
Early 2000s is when all of the sort of illegal downloading and streaming sites came out. And nowadays, like, people don't even rarely sell music.
Yeah.
You know, you make music. And this is a whole nother conversation, but you don't make music off of album sales anymore.
Yeah, it is another. I feel like season two, all the episode categories are conversation talking points we've highlighted in this episode. Anyway, so Quincy Jones, John Mutt Lang, those are household names that came to mind. And then I have two others.
Okay.
One is also a pop genre person.
Okay.
And that's going to be a bit of a rabbit hole, so maybe I'll leave that one.
I brought a big pop person.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think they kind of typify the role of a producer. And then the other one was someone who I've brought to you up before, this guy Dave Otero, who's like a really big metal producer. And I feel like what's noteworthy to mention about anyone who records or produces metal is it's like metal music, by definition, it's like everything turns up to 11, everything is turned up to 11. And like the sound is just fully juiced, like high gain, like intense drums,
but it's not like this is, and this is the beautiful part of production, like especially with metal music, is because if everything was turned up to 11, all you would hear is crackly distortion all day long.
Yeah, but like thinking about the producer and like the band in the studio, and they're like, I mean, everything's cranked, you know. It's like, yeah, the producer has to go, okay, let's pull it back a bit so that I have some control of the overall sound, you know what I mean? So I thought of Dave Otero for sure as like going to be maybe the one where we could quickly jump into some different examples of that. How about you though?
Do we want to go into Dave Otero for a second?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
So I feel like what's worth noting is that, again, like it's really hard to make metal. Some people want a sound that is like low fidelity and sounds like it was recorded in like a doomy dark basement on like a cassette tape, especially black metal. I think in traditional metal and like death metal and stuff like that, it's kind of the opposite. Things are generally pretty well produced in terms of the overall clarity of the sound and, just like in pop music, it's like you want to have like a nice full sounding things. Mm-hmm. Things sound kind of polished. It's like as dirty and grimy as death metal is by definition, it's still the recording quality is there. I think Dave Otero does a good job of...
For those listening, like what are some bands that he's done?
So I don't know if any of them are going to be like household names for me.
But I feel like folks that are into metal like are into it.
Yes. Yeah. So for me, I would say bands that I knew previously and then was happy to find out that he was the one that produced their stuff. Inferi is one band. They're like a melodic death metal band. So as the name would suggest, like it's kind of brutal and intense, but at the same time, the phrasing of the music is like fairly melodic. There's Artspire. I don't know how they say it. They're from Canada. They're from BC. He also produced some of their stuff. And then another one, great name, Cattle Decapitation.
Metal names are hilarious.
They're the best. Cattle Decapitation, at one point, everyone was vegan. I think now they're like mainly vegetarian and stuff like that. But doesn't matter. Yeah, so maybe I'll do like a quick skim of each of these. So here's one from 2021 by Inferi. Fade out there, so you can hear the melodic aspect there.
Oh, and just like also as a caveat as well, like whenever anyone listens to music of any genre, they like first thing you should get is a decent pair of headphones.
Oh yeah,
to listen to music, because it just, you can hear everything, right? And in that track that we just like heard a few seconds of, just the, like, it was wild how you're like loud, everything's 11, but everything's so audible.
You could hear it, right? Yeah.
Whether it's those little guitar lines sort of hanging out in the back there, or that just that big chunky riff and like just smacking you in the face, right? And then when that vocal comes in, it's crisp, it's clean.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, like, it's not muddy at all.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So here's another one. This is Archfire. So this is also a record from 2021. These guys are Canadian, and this one's the title track, Bleed the Future. Let it go to the instrumental part. Anyway, so pretty cool. So the reason why I wanted to show that one too is you can hear, even speaking of vocals, and again with headphones on, you can really hear how like the layering of vocals and the panning of vocals. So like with some of the vocal parts there, like there's stuff left and right and center, and then like the main vocal line stays center. Mm-hmm. And the sound was like that much bigger too, you know?
Yeah. Especially for like a big sort of like low guttural vocal like that. You need that to just like be all over, you know, like that needs to be such a massive sound. Otherwise it just isn't impactful, right?
Yeah. And like, I can't stress enough how like important it is. The role of Dave Otero there is like to just to have room for everything when everyone in the band is like trying to juice it.
Yeah.
Here's a quick example of some like more like death. You know it always brings me down. Like, 'cause it's free. just quickly, same producer, Chemist, I think they're called, from Denver, Colorado, which is where he's positioned. He's stationed, rather. Mm-hmm. Big sound, chunky, really chunky guitars there, but like clean vocals, but you can see like the same kind of big effect, you know?
Yeah, it sounds great. And also like mixing metal music is tough.
Yeah.
Because you have so many things competing, right? So it's just finding space for everything.
Yeah.
Without getting technical is a difficult thing to do. So it, like that's all of the above.
And then here's the last one, which I think is also from 2021. So this is Cattle Decapitation. Again, different vocal technique there. So good. There's a I'm going to fast forward a bit. Maybe it's right here. There you go. And then just to a chunky part. But even there again, like the vocal production alone is like incredible. And the thing I like about that, Travis, I forget his last name, he's a singer. His vocal technique I've heard him say is like the snake, the lion, and the bear.
Mm.
So there's that kind of like, almost snake sounding. Yeah. And then the lion is just like sort of the general roar. And then that like really low, like,
that's the bear.
That's the bear. That's my understanding of it anyway.
That's perfect. So the same singer does all three.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's good for them.
Which, like, again, in terms of the technique. But I just thought, like, those are cool. They're all, for someone who doesn't listen to metal, it's like, those probably all basically sounded the same. Except for the third example, because that was more of, like, a classic rock, almost sort of metal. But the fact that you can hear all that stuff, and also the appreciation of, like, the layering of the vocals and stuff like that. That's why I really think that David Terra is, like, such a talent for a genre where it's, like, really hard to make things sound good.
Yeah, well, you know what? This has been great so far, and maybe we'll pick up this conversation in the next one.
Yeah, I'm done. That's it for me.
No, this has been awesome. Thanks for listening. Thanks for checking out the episode, and stay tuned for part two of our conversation on producers.
Yeah.